The president was greeted by veteran Soviet ambassador
to offer condolences on the death of Leonid Brezhnev.
The operation is what's crucial, because what we do is for the good of the many. Don't let your conscience get us killed.
This is the West Coast Project podcast for the Americans. My name is Mike.
And I'm Jamie.
Jamie, what's going on?
I'm just chilling, man. It's a beautiful day outside today. Amazing sunshine. I'm a busy girl. I got lots to do. So today's good.
I don't have any crazy sound effects this week. Do you have any chimps with machine guns or playing pianos or anything?
No, I could totally play the sounds of the restaurant that we were in last night when we went to dinner. We had this crazy fun time and a great conversation, but I'd have to pull it up and play it for you, so I don't know. It would take time.
That's not even interesting, though.
Oh, it's totally interesting. You have no idea.
All right, well, this is 310 Stingers for the Americans. Jamie, I really got into the Insider podcast this week from the Americans. If you like the technical aspect of how shows are made and the way writers and directors think and work, this one was really good, this Slate Insider podcast. Did you happen to listen to it?
No, I never listen to them before we record because I feel like they may influence me. And so I always wait until after, and it's killing me because I really want to watch it. I mean, yeah. Listen to it.
I think you've told me that before, but I can't not listen to it. We do our show kind of late from the time the episode runs. We should probably try to get closer to the day after the episode or something. But on this director's, insider cast, the directors we're talking about, or the showrunners, I guess, how they take a lot of scenes, they take a lot of shots of scenes, and then when they have to decide what to use, they don't keep what's best, they pare down the worst. They take out the worst first, and then they decide from what's left over. And then they also had an interesting conversation about how actors expressing emotions, they have to balance that really carefully. Like, they have to tell the actor, like, don't cry too much, because if you cry too much, you'll take the power of the emotion away from the audience. You know, you'll have all the power of the emotion, and the audience won't feel it as much. Whereas if you cry a little bit, or if you hint at sadness a little bit, then the audience bears the weight of the sadness.
Yeah, actually, you know, that's true. I don't remember what show it was. I don't know if it was Breaking Bad, or I think it was actually Breaking Bad. They were talking about like just being on the verge of tears and not letting a tear fall was so much more, like, you know, just having the tears welled up in your eyes is so much more emotionally compelling for an audience to see. It was the scene that in Breaking Bad where Hank had gotten in trouble for beating up Jesse. And he was going in to turn in his gun, and he was sitting on the bed with Marie. It was that really beautiful scene, and they were both on the verge of crying. But Vince Gilligan told him, whatever you do, don't let a tear fall. And it was for that reason.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, the Americans got renewed for season 4, too, right before this episode came out, so 4 or 5 days ago, whatever time is.
I'm so excited. I was just wondering about that.
So do you think, because when they made this episode, they didn't know they were going to have a season 4. Or actually, their ratings haven't been that great. Do you think they're constructing this season not knowing that they would have had a 4th season and maybe having to have wrapped it up in just season 3?
I don't know.
Because they revealed a lot, as we know, after this episode. They revealed a lot in this episode.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it feels to me more like a season ender than a series ender. But I know that some very good series in the past that have had those kinds of issues with getting that straight Nielsen viewership data, they have sort of treated their season enders like they could be series enders, but without, like, sort of burning everything to the ground.
Right, and they have to kind of tell the story. I mean, if I was a writer or a showrunner and I didn't know I had a 4th season, I'd want my story to have some sort of a bracket, right? A beginning and an ending. I wouldn't want to just leave it hanging.
Yeah, that's the worst. Yeah, that's really the worst. And it leaves the fans feeling so unsatisfied.
All right, so let's get into it. This one starts at the travel agency. And back in 1982, 83, you have to actually go to a travel agent. There's no internet to look at a flight or a hotel.
Yes.
Pretty good reminder of that. And it's Pastor Tim. Tim comes over to get a trip set up to go to Kenya for 20 people. Maybe
right.
Even plus Elizabeth and Philip if they're interested.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he says, we can stay light on the God part if that helps you decide.
I don't know what the deal is with Pastor Tim, but he gives me the absolute creeps. I do not like that dude.
He's given a lot of people the creeps in the forums and stuff. Why do you think he's in the show?
Oh, well, I mean, he serves a purpose. He's a character. He's important. But no, I don't know. I just, ugh.
Why, though? What's his purpose in the show? That's my question. What's his plot?
Okay, so Paige is dealing with all of her stuff that she's got going on through religion. And she just can't be going off to an anonymous church somewhere, just disappearing to the church. Because then, you know, the audience would be saying, well, I mean, what is she doing at the church? This is stupid. So it has to be three-dimensional. She has to have a relationship with somebody there and, you know, that kind of thing. And then Pastor Tim provides a lot of texture. He, you know, he's the foil, I guess you could say. Like, he's the person who brings all the bad news to, you know, Philip and Elizabeth, kind of, you know, and gives them that, I guess, kind of something to have friction with, you know.
There's some speculation that Pastor Tim might be a part of KGB, that if Philip and Elizabeth can't turn Paige, that this influential young thinker that's in Paige's life could help turn her, that he's actually another KGB guy.
Yeah. I heard you say that before. We talked about that before. I don't know. I would be really surprised if that were the case, but I don't know what to think, because it seemed like there was some subtext to the conversation that they had this episode, so I don't know.
I actually agree with you what you just said there a minute ago, that Pastor Tim's not a spy, not part of a turner of Elizabeth into a spy, but that he's part of her support system to get her to the decision she needs to make. So she's not entirely on her own. Like, she has this knowledge now, and she can share it with him, and he can help support her outside of the Philip and Elizabeth zone of influence.
Yeah.
I think that's his role. I think he also might be in trouble, too, because if he knows anything more about what now Paige knows, then he's going to be short for the series, I think.
Oh, yeah, they'll kill him. And Philip will do it himself, and he'll take great joy in doing so.
Yeah, what do you think about this? Now, Pastor Tim comes in for a meeting, and he's all kind of jovial and friendly. Not too long ago, Philip threatened this guy pretty directly.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't get that. I don't know what the deal is with those two, because they have what is clearly, you know, just on the face of it, a very antagonistic positioning against each other. But every time they interact these days, it seems very cordial. So I don't know.
Well, let's go to the movies, Jamie. Stan and Zenaida are at Tootsie.
Yeah.
He's dousing her in total Americana culture here, Tootsie from whatever, 1982. 83, whatever that was. She's having Kit Kats now. She likes the candy bars.
Yeah, finally not a Milky Way.
But there are no chick FBI agents. Stan has to go into the bathroom with Zenaida and his two support goons. There were no female agents to walk her in there and do whatever they had to do to watch over her or watch out for her.
Well, I mean, it's the early 80s, so.
And now she leaves something under that counter, so we know she is a double agent now by this action in the bathroom.
Right. We finally got our answer.
And I guess this is why Stan didn't find anything in the other bathroom, right? Because it was under the – in kind of a weird place.
Well, either that or she didn't place anything that time, or whoever was picking up that dead drop picked it up already, because he came back at almost closing time.
Do you think that was a note or some sort of electronic chip? Could you see what that was?
Yeah, we find out later. It's a note.
Okay. Oh, it's the note with the letters and numbers and stuff?
Right.
Yeah, okay. And that was it. That was the first scene, the credits roll. And we come back and we find out that Henry has a secret hiding place with his girly pics and Sandra pics.
Yeah, that was my... Okay, so here's the deal. Remember the first time we saw Henry with that bikini pic? That was during the time that those first few episodes of this season that were those really super, super dark episodes, right? And I figured that was like the series, the show's sweet way of showing a really innocent person's dark side. So, you know, Henry's like probably the most innocent person on the show, and or aside from Paige, maybe. And so his real dark side, instead of being like threatening murder and showing guns and doing all this other and disposing of bodies and things, he's got bikini pic of his neighbor's wife. Oh, he's coveting his neighbor's wife. Oh, that's wild. That just occurred to me.
Well, every 14-year-old boy has a stash like that of porn.
Yeah, but that's like a Ten Commandments thing. That's so like really clever. I wonder if they did that on purpose. I would be really curious to know if they did that on purpose.
That's not coveting the wife, though. That's just sexual attraction.
I mean, right. That's what that is. When you covet somebody, like you really, really want that person. That's what that is. You covet them.
That's impulse, though. It's not like I want to be the boyfriend of that person. It's just sexual.
Right. But no, I'm just saying like that. I thought it was really cute. You know, like it's a cute way to make him like, you know, this like that's his darkness. His darkness is this bikini pic. But anyway. So I realized later on that that was like Henry's little portion, because everybody in those few episodes had this like dark, really, really dark, dark, whatever it was that was going on. And so we see a return to that in this episode. There was a lot of real darkness happening there. And, you know, and that was, I guess, his part of it is like he's got his stash of lady photos.
Well, Paige calls him down to dinner, and Elizabeth, Philip, and Paige and Henry, I guess, are talking about Pastor Tim coming in for travel, the travel agency, and she had asked him to go in there and talk to Philip. Paige right. had asked Tim to come in. That was kind of interesting.
Well, I didn't think so. I didn't think it was unusual or anything. I thought it was about right. You know, Paige almost like treats these people like an adopted family. So
it's interesting that Tim did go in, though, like he wasn't intimidated by Philip from before, that he just kind of he's this somehow strong. He doesn't seem strong, but he's got some strength, odd religious strength to him.
You're right.
He seems strong physically or like a strong presence. He just seems calmly strong.
Yes, you're right. That's a very, very good way to describe it.
And then during that dinner, Philip gets a call from somebody. We don't know who it is, but it's Kimmy, right? So, because he goes to Kimmy, a party for Kimmy.
Right, yeah.
How does Kimmy get a call through to Philip at the Jennings house?
Okay, so I've been turning this over in my mind since the first time that happened, because that happened before. And here's what I think. I think he has some sort of phone number that somebody else checks. She calls the number, leaves a message, and then somebody else calls Philip and says, this is the place and the time that you need to meet.
Yeah, that phone room lady, that phone room they have.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we need more paperwork on the trip to Amsterdam, and that's Kimmy. That's some sort of code for Kimmy.
Right.
Whatever, they code it. They cleanse it through that phone room and send it to the Jennings house.
Right.
All right, so Philip does go to Kimmy. She's at some sort of a raver party. Did you recognize any of the music in the party?
No, I didn't. I wasn't listening, and I wasn't paying particular attention to the music. I was looking at the actors.
Kimmy's wasted again. That's kind of her MO. She's just a party chick, kind of lost in the world at this point.
Yeah, poor Kimmy.
And we jump cut away from that pretty quickly, though, to Nina's project with Anton back in Russia. Nina finally delivers that lemon, Jamie, and she asks him what he's working on. What is he working on? Do you know what he's working on?
I think he's working on that stealth bomber stuff. I think he's trying to figure out the. I think he's trying to figure out that the formula. Remember they stole the paint sample?
Yeah. And
I think that's what he's working on.
So Baklanov, this guy Anton Baklanov, he was a Russian defector that lived in America and then it got stolen back to Russia.
Right.
Right. So he's really, I mean, where is his allegiance? You think he's potentially back to being a Russian, a good Russian, the good Russian and not the defector? He has to do what he's doing because he's kept under lock and key, but
right.
Do you think he may just turn back to being, well, fight for Mother Russia again?
Nah. No, I mean, he was never about Mother Russia. I mean, this dude was, he's a Jew living in communist Russia. He was a refusenik.
So, but like, my real question is, how do you get a guy who doesn't want to help you to help you? You keep him alive.
Well, you threaten him. You have it. Okay. His wife and son are in America. He hasn't heard from or seen them since he was taken back and repatriated. He doesn't know what's going on with them. He knows Russia would not hesitate to execute them both. His freedom is on the line. You're right. He's probably under lock and key. He's not going to do anything that's going to mess anything up. And I think that Russia is trying to motivate him because they're also in a precarious position because nobody has the understanding and the science and the mind and the mathematics to be able to figure out if he's dragging his feet or if he's really stuck or what's going on. Okay. So they're trying to figure out how they can push him and how they can manipulate him, but they can't even do that. And that's why they need Nina, because they don't know what he's doing, if he's dragging his feet, if he's really sincere and trying to get it done. But whatever it is, his heart is not with Mother Russia.
So Nina's job is to prompt him to do it faster, to actually get his work done, because he is dragging his feet, obviously. He's just going slowly because he hates Russia because of the way they stole him away from his other life that he had created.
Well, okay, so I think he does hate Russia, but I don't know if he's dragging his feet. I mean, I don't know if he's really stuck, because somebody who looks that frustrated and who's that, like, short with somebody, like how he was with Nina, when she said, you know, can I help you? He said, are you a scientist? That was what he needed. He needed help. He's trying to get answers. So I don't know if it's clear that he's really dragging his feet.
Yeah, it's an interesting struggle. I mean, question about his struggle, because why wouldn't you drag your feet if you're... You're in the grasp of this enemy that just did all this shit to you. You know, why not? Why would you dive right in and help them 100 miles an hour, you know, 100%? You wouldn't. You'd help them a little bit, maybe, just to satisfy what they think they need from you.
Well, unless, like I said, unless you're afraid for your family.
Yeah, but are they threatening his family, or are they prompting him with Nina? You know, they're giving him the good side with the honey trap with Nina to try to keep him... Nina's not there to help him with anything logistically. She's there to be attractive and to lure him into being more productive.
Right, right. But so here's the deal. They can't openly threaten him and say, if you don't do this, we'll kill your family. Because then they might really get him motivated to work against them in a really smart way. So... all they can do is really do like veiled threats. Veiled threats are oftentimes much more effective, right? And so I don't think that they would openly threaten his family until it came to that, unless they were waiting for way too long for a solution to the problem. But I'm sure that he realizes that his family is in danger, because he's in danger, you know? And if the honeypot doesn't work, then they have the family to fall back on. If it doesn't work, Nina, and first of all, Nina is not only sent there to motivate him, she is sent there to find out what the issue is. Because remember, when she took this deal, the guy told her, we don't know if he's really stuck or if he's dragging his feet.
It It almost prompts the question, like, if you were Baklanov, wouldn't you try to figure out some sort of a deal for yourself? Like, go to the Russian KGB guy that's managing you and just say, look, I'll give you this, but at point X along the way, I want you to send me back to America where I will continue to give you a little bit more until you have everything. And then I'm free. I mean, you have to make some sort of a plot, a plan to get yourself out of this, right?
Well, he's at their mercy. He can't.
They're at his mercy too. They need what you know. Somebody needs what you have. You can negotiate with them and get something that you want.
Yeah, but this is Russia. This is Russia. Here's the deal. He can't do anything without endangering his family.
All right. Well, it's complicated. I mean, he's kind of like Jesse in the grasp of the Nazis. He's got to do whatever they want with no resolution. It just goes on forever.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I'd like to have him find a way out of this. No. He talks to Nina, though, in English, I think for the first time, or she responds back to him in English for the first time. It's the first time that I remember them talking in English to each other.
Right, that's right. And that's exactly what happened. He was talking to her in Russian, and then she answered him eventually in English and shocked him. And he's like, oh, how did you learn English?
He's resigned to all the stuff we just talked about, that it doesn't even matter anyway, because I can't get results without photos. And those photos would be really difficult to get. And Nina kind of is smart here, because she strategically says, well, it takes people to get photos, and those people need to be in place, and that could take months and years.
Right.
That's a very sophisticated answer. It's not, let me see what I can do. It's a kind of an excuse, right? You can't get photos right away because it takes longer.
Well, I think she gave him a lot of information in that one sentence that told him everything he needed to know about whether he could trust her. Because when she said that, what that information meant is that she knows how the spy game works. She knows specifics about this particular case. She is speaking in English. That means that she is skilled enough and intelligent enough to know, to be fluent in another language. And knowing about this case, and then having been in America and been speaking English and knowing all this stuff, she just basically told him that she's a spy, and that, or that she was a spy, and that she worked for the KGB. She told him all that in that one little bit of text.
Yeah, they seem to be building that Anton and Nina will have some sort of an alliance. They're getting friendlier, and they started out pretty rough, and now they're talking, and they seem to be building an alliance.
An alliance built on lemon juice.
Yeah. It's been done. All right. We'll go back to Philip and Kimmy. They get to her house, and she goes to the bathroom, and he scans around the house again. Now, this briefcase switch out of this listening device, it's a little tape recorder. I thought at first it seems kind of dumb. Like, why put something in there that you have to take out every week? Why not just put a transmitter in there once, and then you'd have it the whole time? But maybe the transmitter leaves some sort of a signature that the CIA scans for when they have meetings and stuff. And it's better to have a dumb recorder that doesn't put out anything.
You're right. That makes perfect sense. I'm so glad you said that, because I didn't really actively wonder about that. But when you said it, I thought, oh, gosh, why didn't they put it in a transmitter? Because they had one in the CIA office. But that makes sense. I mean, the FBI office.
And then Philip sees a little picture of Kimmy and her family.
Yeah, and she looks miserable.
Right. She's the only one not smiling in the picture.
Yeah, poor Kimmy. Ugh.
Well, Philip takes the recorder back home, and Elizabeth and Philip listen to it. And there's a very complicated conversation here, and maybe you can help me unravel it, Jamie. Basically, the gist of it is this ISI organization, Inter-Services Intelligence. It's like the intelligence service of Pakistan, and they're sending somebody important to meet with the CIA. And then, so they have the literal conversation between the people. Did you grasp? Do you have a general concept of what they're trying to say in this recorded conversation?
A very, very general idea. Yeah, I mean, it was hard to hear, But it sounds like that somebody, like what you said, somebody's coming and they're going to get there on, I think they said the 18th.
Yeah. Well, here's the conversation. Let's maybe try to break it down. Okay. One guy says, what happened to Hilton? And then he's responded to with, it didn't get approved. Are you kidding me? It's more than two rooms. For more than two rooms, you need the deputy director's approval. Oh, for God's sake. We're going to stay at the Clayton in Crystal City. These guys won't know the difference. They're used to sleeping in caves. So apparently they were going to have somebody come and have them stay at the Hilton, but it didn't get approved because it's more than two rooms. So they switched to this hotel, this Clayton Hotel in Crystal City. And then the reference to the people that they're housing who are used to sleeping in caves, Elizabeth says Mujahideen. Sorry.
Yeah. So yeah, and that is who sleeps in caves. I mean, like, they still do. Yeah.
So then back to this conversation, this one guy says, so ISI confirmed their travel, right? They're getting in on the 18th. That's the important thing. And we need these meetings to happen. It'll happen. And the army isn't trying to screw it up. They won't even know about it till the day before. We have to invite them, though. They've been trying to stop this for 2 years. And then Elizabeth interjects, trying to stop what? And then the conversation continues. The army isn't on the ground in Afghanistan. It's not their war. Well, if this works, we're not going to even need them.
Wow.
And so Elizabeth wants to bring the tape in to the, I guess, Gabriel or whoever they deliver it to. And Philip says, no, he'll do it. So I guess there's this visiting person coming to the CIA from the Mujahideen.
Mujahideen, yeah.
And it's some sort of important meeting that they have to get in on or capture that guy or do something with it. But this visit on the 18th, I guess, is the gist of this whole conversation.
Yeah.
And they know where now. It's this hotel in Crystal City, and then we're going to see Philip and Elizabeth go to that hotel.
Right.
Yeah. And then Louis C.K. puts his therapist to sleep. Oh, sorry, that's a commercial.
Oh, God. Okay, so you do a podcast on the Louis TV series, and I am in love with Louis, and so I'm going to be watching the new season and listening to your podcast that you do with Michelle on that series.
Well, thanks for teeing that up, Jamie. That's why I snuck that in there. We do it. It's coming up, I think, this week, right? Next week?
April 9th.
Yeah. We love Louis. So that was the commercial, or a bunch of commercials. We come back to Philip and Islamabad signaled Youssef last night, but there was no reply. So Youssef is going to come back into play here.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know. I still think that Youssef is an odious personality, and I don't like him. I rather dislike him extremely for what he did to Annalise, but I guess we have to deal with him, so we'll go ahead and see if we can get some information from him.
So they try to make it look like Youssef may be ducking them.
I don't know if that meant that he was ducking them or if he might be in danger.
Yeah. They need to know more about this. So, because they need to know more about this ISI sending someone so they can go after them, I think. And I think Youssef can help tell them this.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's why they're trying to get a hold of Youssef. So Elizabeth has already scoped out this hotel in Crystal City. She mentions that. And Paige walks in. And they're in the travel agency while this is all going on. So Paige walks into the travel agency. And she hadn't been there in a while, Jamie. Her Legos are still in the drawer, so they brought her in there when she was a little girl.
Yeah, and I loved the way that bit of dialogue was written. These writers, I love them so much because the stuff that, you know, conversation has little funky parts that where it kind of falls apart. Like, linguistically speaking, there's stuff inside language that kind of doesn't really mean anything, or it's, you know, or it's just filler kind of stuff, or sometimes it's words that people use all the time. They mean absolutely nothing, or they mean something that they don't really actually literally say. And that's the stuff that makes real conversation, like real language between people. And these writers are so good at doing that. I mean, they're so good at it. It blows my mind because you never see this. You never see this, even in excellent writing on television. And these guys are masters at it. So when Elizabeth says, your Legos are in the bottom of the drawer, Paige says, oh, that's okay. And that is something anybody would say, but nobody would ever write. And all it means is, oh, come on. Yeah, I'm too old for that. You know, I'm not going to, but I don't want to be impolite to my parents. And so, and that's not what I'm here for anyway. So, oh, that's okay.
It's kind of a fond remembrance by Elizabeth, but it was kind of a dismissal by Paige. Like, I'm not here to play Legos. I'm too old.
But such a polite and appropriate dismissal.
Yeah, it's very colloquial. Like, that's okay. It's like, no. It's not instead of no. She says, that's okay. You're right. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's so accurate. And that's what I love about these guys. They're writing. The voices of these characters are so authentic.
Do you think Paige was spying? Why would she go in there just to see what they're doing? And she hasn't been there in a while. The paint's different. Its room looks a little different. We know later that she's suspicious. Do you think she was spying?
She could have been. If I had been her, I would have been.
It's not really a very telling spy attack. She doesn't really learn anything.
Well, no, but then she never learns anything, and that may be why she does what she does later.
I like how Philip put her to work doing those forms like are you turning me into a travel agent? Like, oh, are you going to turn me into a spy? It's kind of a hint of a little mirror of that.
Oh, that is cool. Huh.
Then we go back to Henry now. Henry at home. Stan comes over and discusses Stratomatic with him. Stratomatic was pretty cool, Jamie. Had you heard of it before this?
No, I never had.
It's a game. It's like a math game. It assigned all kinds of averages and the actual literal baseball averages and on-base percentages of players so that you could pick them and choose them in games and play them against each other.
That's so cool.
If you think of, if you've ever heard of the story Moneyball or the how general managers use more metrics now to measure players and rookies to figure out if they'll be good as professional ball players.
Right.
Moneyball's kind of based on that theory that you can almost digitize a player's stats and make projections on how well they'll play. And that's what Stratomatic was. It was cards, like baseball cards with stats on them, and you would play them against each other.
Huh.
So it was tactile. You literally held the cards and put players into position and stuff.
That's pretty cool.
Stan also gives Henry a pirated copy of Tron.
Yeah, that's, you know, Stan is kind of into those pirated movies. He had one with the French Lieutenant's woman, I think, was with Nina. He got it from the movie guy and brought it to Nina.
And Henry puts it into this giant VHS or Betamax tape deck. I can't figure out which, but it took up like a whole counter.
Those machines, man.
And then he's doing that as Philip and Elizabeth come home. They call him Santa Claus, kind of derisively, Philip does.
Oh.
I'm calling him Santa Claus, just making fun of him. But, yeah, he's got all kinds of gifts for Henry, Stratomatic and pirated tapes. So let's go to this Crystal City Hotel. Philip and Elizabeth scope it out, and they notice the shift change. They're hoping it's a woman so Philip can seduce her and not put Elizabeth in the role of being the seducer. But no, it's a dude. It's a guy.
Yeah.
Philip's trying to protect her again from being with a guy somehow. And it seems like they both have adopted this theory now.
What's that?
That Philip does the seducing and not Elizabeth.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what that's about. I've noticed that a couple of times, and I think it's... It's interesting. I'm not sure why that's the case, unless it's just for the reasons that you and I discussed, that women are more vulnerable in situations like that. And, you know, maybe, you know, Philip just really doesn't want her to, you know, to be involved with anybody else physically.
I think that's it. I think Philip's kind of put his foot down, like, I don't want you to be with another guy.
Yeah, maybe.
And even he suggests trying again in the morning to see if somebody in the morning staff might be a woman. But Elizabeth says there's no time. They have to get, I guess this meeting's coming up super fast at this hotel.
Right.
They have to get in on the staff to.
Right. They have 24 hours. That's what the situation was.
So we jump over to Stan separating the household goods of him and Sandra at the house. And Henry comes over to play the Strat-O-Matic game. And Stan goes through a really interesting conversation with Henry about divorce. He explains divorce to him.
Yeah.
Now, Henry's already seen this little peekaboo picture of Sandra. So it's interesting. Like, Henry's looking up at love from a 14-year-old perspective, and Stan's looking kind of down at love from the failed marriage adult viewpoint.
Right. Yeah. And there's Henry losing a good bit of his innocence there. You know, talking with Stan about this and understanding that sometimes it doesn't work out the way that it did with his dad and mom. Sometimes the other parent doesn't come home, and sometimes it doesn't work out.
Well, maybe your comment about Henry coveting Stan's wife is prescient, because here's an interesting angle where Henry knows it, right, but Stan doesn't, that, wow, I've kind of wanted your wife too. But Henry says, my dad left for a while but came back. What was that about? When did Philip leave and come back?
Oh, okay. So this was in season one, after the discovery of, what's his son's name?
Matthew.
Misha?
Oh, Misha, yeah.
Yeah, Misha. After the discovery of Misha, okay, when Philip went away and slept with Irina, came back and lied to Elizabeth about it. Claudia found out, told Elizabeth. Elizabeth put Philip out.
Okay.
Said she wanted a divorce. Philip said, I don't think the center would even blink. It's the 1980s. People get divorced now. I think it would be fine if you and I got divorced. And he left, and he was gone for a few weeks. And then the season ender, when Elizabeth got shot, brought them back together.
God, it seems so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Henry knows about all this?
Henry doesn't know about Elizabeth getting shot, but he knows his dad left.
Yeah, I guess he would know that.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks about Matthew, Stan's son Matthew, and Stan doesn't even know if Matthew still lives there. That's pretty sad.
Yeah, well, okay, so I will tell you, you know, the sad truth is that I'm a person who's divorced, and so I know about this kind of stuff, and that can really be the case. Like, if you've got two households and you got like kids that are kind of living between the two households, if you're not like the parent who has the kids all the time, like, you know, my situation, I had the kids, but, you know, my ex did not have the kids all the time. You know, there were times when there was a question, okay, well, do they live with you at all? Are they going to go, you know, and be with you? You know, I mean, and our situation was a little different because, you know, he was nearby and they were with him every weekend and that kind of stuff. But I mean, there were questions like that would come up, because there was a time when he was going to maybe relocate to another country and we didn't know what was going to happen. Like, you know, and so it was really legitimate. And that's the thing that these writers do so well. I thought it was such a great answer, because somebody who's never been in that situation would say, what the heck are you talking about? Of course he lives there. Of course he doesn't live there, or, you know, whatever it is that their opinion is. But for somebody who's been in those kinds of situations, that's legit.
Especially, like, to a kid, like, Stan doesn't even try to protect Henry. He just says, well, you know, that's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, and then there's another commercial. We come back to Elizabeth and the hotel guy, and there's a nasty stain on the bed, Jamie. And so he comes up and looks at it and offers to comp the room. Mm-hmm. But Elizabeth flirts with him and negotiates that problem into a dinner later.
Right.
And I've never heard a steak being described as sounding lovely. But as soon as she can't make it, the guy backs off and says, well, I just meant a voucher. I didn't mean like a date. But he's being coy here because I think he directly meant a date with you and me to go have dinner together.
Absolutely.
But she brings it back to life. She wants a rain check the next time she's in town. Yeah. We find out this guy's name is Neil. That matters. Let's jump over to Philip and Gabriel now. Yusef won't talk to the residentura. He wants to come in and talk to them in person. And find out more about this son of Philip deal. Gabriel's arranged for the son to be released. The son doesn't want to be released, but Gabriel can force it. Not released, but taken out of combat, I guess. Mm-hmm. And Philip turns it down, too. Philip can force him to be taken out. I see smoke and mirrors here, all up and down and left and right, Jamie. This is Gabriel playing Philip, I think.
I keep telling you, he's not a figment of Gabriel. He is, like, Irina told him about Misha.
Yeah, but Irina's could be no more trustworthy than Gabriel.
But why would they make him up? I don't get that.
Because of this. They can manipulate Philip with this son that is valuable to him. That they can also measure him this way.
But this was from season one.
There's no long games in the Americans?
Well, yeah, but I don't know. I believe he's real.
I think it's a great way for Gabriel to measure Philip. Like, how committed are you? You want me to take him out of battle? Nope. Okay, good. You're on plan.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so this dude has, like, murdered people and, you know, risked his life and done everything else. I mean, I think they know he's committed to the cause, even though he's kind of derisive about it. And he's emotionally, I think he's really half in. Oh, and by the way, before the season is over, I want to tell you something. I don't know if you noticed. I picked this up immediately when it happened and just didn't remember to mention it during our podcast. But the episode, remember the episode a few episodes back where the Nagobo thing was going down and Philip was in the shower and Elizabeth came in. Remember we were talking about him being in the shower? That was his only haven, his only escape. And he'd gotten out of the shower totally naked with no towel or anything. And then Elizabeth came in and they were talking about Nagobo. Remember that?
Yes.
So Philip said to Elizabeth in that scene, how do we know we can trust him? Just because he says he's a communist, kind of derisively. And then she says, no, it's because he's got a reputation or he fights for the cause or whatever. But the way that he said it was it kind of like eye-rolling, sarcastic, oh, so we should just trust him because he's a communist, right? I don't think this dude really is even a communist anymore.
Philip?
I think, yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, I really think his ideals and his real inner true beliefs are different.
I don't know. Last episode with the robot, when he found out there was a woman up there and he just said, well, she picked the wrong night to work late. I mean, that meant go kill her, take her out. That's being committed to the cause.
Well, no, I'm not saying he's not committed to the cause. I'm saying that his inner value system is not what he's fighting. Like, it doesn't represent what he's fighting for.
Well, it's expanded. I believe that since he's come to America, he's like, wow, Camaro's pretty cool. Pizza, beer, freedom. It's definitely his eyes are open to a greater world. And I think that's really a huge influence on him. But I still think he's a Russian.
Well, I mean, he's definitely a Russian, and I think that he's still an idealist. I think he still believes in, the majority of the causes that his country is about, but I don't think he's a communist.
That's a pretty strong statement.
It is, and I'm sticking by it.
All right. Well, back to this whole Gabriel, Irina, Misha thing. I mean, they want this couple to turn Paige into an agent. Into a servant of the motherland. And it's great to have a window in on how their feelings are on it by this person, Misha, whether he's real or not. If Philip's willing to take him out of action, he's less committed than if he says, no, keep him in. He's fighting for the homeland. I think it's an interesting angle. And I like not knowing whether Misha is real or not.
I think you are the only person who's questioning whether Misha's real.
Oh, I don't believe that.
I do. I don't know. I mean, I never questioned it. Like when she said, oh, you have a son, we have a son together, it was a secret. Like nobody else knows. And remember when Gabriel told Philip about it, he's like, you're the only person who can confirm whether this is your son, you know, kind of thing. I just don't see any reason why he wouldn't be real.
Well, they don't reinforce it that he is real very strongly.
Why should they? I mean, like, it would be like saying, you know,
because it's good plot. It's interesting that he's kind of this questionable, is he real or not? Even if I'm the only one questioning it.
Well, I tell you what, it'll be really, really cool if he shows up on the scene next season.
Okay. So we get more good creative story writing here. Jamie, two knocks is the signal. It's Elizabeth coming in on Philip and Gabriel. Two knocks is a really good code. Think about it. You go to a door next time you need to knock on a door and just only knock twice. You're just so compelled to knock that third time. Right? Just two knocks is so unusual that it's a really good code.
That is cool.
But they find out, or they decide that they have to wait for Yusuf, or they just remind us that they have to wait for Yusuf to plot their next steps. And then we go to Philip and Elizabeth going home, and Paige is waiting for them. And this is the big talk time now, Jamie. This is Holly Taylor's big scene as Paige, and she's grown. She started in this series when she was 13 years old, and they made a great choice by picking Holly Taylor to be this character.
They did. And you know, she live blogged the episode.
Oh, did she? Were you watching it?
No, I didn't watch it, but I saw it later that she'd live blogged it.
Oh, cool. If you have a link to that, send it to me and I'll put it in the show notes.
All right.
But Paige is questioning them now. What's going on? She's bringing all of her suspicions to the forefront. Are you in witness protection? Are you killers? Are you drug dealers? Are you aliens? She's talked to Pastor Tim. I see doom ahead for Pastor Tim. I've talked to Pastor Tim and discussed this, and so he's got to be, you know, maybe he went into the travel agency as kind of a little spy game to figure out, just to get his take on it. But she has no aunts or uncles or cousins. I didn't even ever think about that. You're a kid, you have no aunts or uncles or cousins?
Right.
Pretty weird.
Exactly. And that was just so amazing to me. I was so happy to hear her say that, because this conversation right here is the full circle turn of the little trip she took at the beginning of season two. Remember when she left home and she just disappeared and went off to go visit their aunt's house? Remember?
Mm-hmm.
And then she got in trouble for not being where she was supposed to be. Well, this is what she was looking for. This was the question that was in her mind then. Why? Where are our relatives? And, you know, here she comes out with it, and she's so frustrated, and her acting was so good. I was so proud of her.
So good and not overacted at all. It's just really believable.
That's right.
Elizabeth tries to smooth it all out, but Philip finally takes control, and he does most of the talking. They make it clear that she can't tell anyone, even Henry. And if you do, it's jail for good for us. So they make it pretty clear what has to happen and what has to not happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it was so necessary for them to actually tell her that. I was so glad they said something to her, because it seemed like she might just go and say something to somebody if they hadn't.
Well, they still don't trust her, because when they compare notes later, they take the phone off the hook so she doesn't call out.
Yeah.
Late at night. They don't trust Paige yet.
Yeah.
And they ask each other, are you okay? And I don't know. Are you okay? Pretty great scene there.
oh, I thought it was so well acted. It was so well acted. And it was so well written. I loved how they danced around the word spy, how they kept bringing it back to the actual work they do. We work for our country. We help our country. And, you know, when she finally said spy, Elizabeth corrected her again, you know. It was so well written. It was so well done. And their emotions were so beautiful and very underplayed. You know how we were talking about the cry, like how the cry, you're taking something away from the audience if you let that emotion happen inside of you as the actor. And, you know, and let it kind of come to fruition. I love how subdued everything was because the emotions were there. I mean, they were so ripe and so kind of simmering right there at the surface, but they never spilled over.
Right. It was very, very cool.
Yeah.
Next, Louis C.K. offers kids candy in the street. Oh, wait, it's a commercial. Hey, did you know we have a Louis podcast?
Are you reminding me? Is this my second chance to say yes? I know you have an awesome Louis podcast.
I guess I'm trying to say we have a commercial break here.
Well, so. I will tell you what, Mike, you're such a great podcaster, and Louis is such a great show, and I plan on watching and listening.
All right, all right. Turn off the pimp. That I was just making a little joke, not a full blown commercial. So in the morning, Paige is kind of considering the weight of what she's just heard, and Elizabeth comes in to visit her. First of all, Jamie, Elizabeth's room, or Paige's room, is the ugliest room in Teenville.
Is it
not? And maybe Las Vegas.
Oh, my
God. That wallpaper, Jesus.
It's got to go. Season 4 has got to begin with them tearing down that damn wallpaper. It's horrible.
Crazy. Paige wants to stay home, and Elizabeth offers to stay with her. Or dad can stay with you, or both of us, but she declines. This is a big trust moment here. They want to stay with her, obviously, because they want to keep an eye on her. I know they have concern for her, too, but they want to keep an eye on her.
Well, for sure.
And Paige says, no, I want to be home. I need time by myself. And they have to really trust her here.
Yeah.
There's something important I think we need to remember here, and that's Henry. They've been making some very strong points about Henry and Paige in the last few episodes. Paige has been very maternal towards Henry lately, cooking for him, telling him to go to bed, etc. But Henry's got to be part of Paige's consideration here too. If she blows this up, her and Henry are essentially homeless, right? Did mom, dad go to jail? What happens to me and Henry?
Right.
Like it might be an easier decision for her to blow it up had there been no Henry involved.
Right.
I don't know. I just thought that was important that they make these points about Paige being big sisterly / maternal towards Henry.
Well, I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, because she does feel responsible for him and she is, you know, kind of motherly to him. And you know, I'm glad they didn't overtly threaten, like, and say, oh, what's going to happen to Henry if you destroy our lives, you know? I'm glad that they didn't do that. You know, I think they handled it as well as they could.
Next, we see Henry, and he's doing his Mr. Robinson, Eddie Murphy.
Oh, my God. I loved it so much.
About the wife walking out on him. So everything he's listening to in real life is sinking in, and he's manufacturing it into his little teenage personality and coming out with the Eddie Murphy, Mr. Robinson, wife walking out on him.
So do you remember that or did you have to figure out what the reference was?
No, I remember. It's like Saturday Night Live, right?
Yeah, that's like Saturday Night Live. That was, man, that Eddie Murphy was so funny back then. Wow.
Then he makes another joke about the eviction notice as he walks out the front door.
Yeah. And this was so funny about it, because when his mom walked in, he just, you know, you kind of realized, I'm saying bad words in front of my mom. I shouldn't be saying it. But he picks it right back up when he goes to leave the house. And I thought that was just such a teenager thing.
Yeah. Like he's bold. Bold and funny.
Yeah.
We love Henry.
Yeah.
So they come in with breakfast now with Paige, and they double check. Do you sure we don't want us to stay with you? And she asks them to speak in Russian. You think she's looking for a way to disprove their claim Jamie, like, are you really Russian? Speak to me in Russian.
Okay, so I don't think that she's trying to disprove anything, but I know that that's a question that I would ask. If my parents came to me and said, oh, by the way, you know, we're not Americans, we're from some other country, you know, and, you know, we're spies, that would be one of the first things I'd ask. Speak to me in this other language. This is something, my parents are fluent in another language that I've maybe never even really heard before, and I want to hear them speak it.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought it might be a little bit of proof, like I'm trying to, it's denial, right? I want to deny that what you told me is true, so prove that you're really Russian.
Well, now that makes sense.
Well, Elizabeth says something in Russian, and Philip says it means we love you very much. But a commenter on HitFix, on Ellen Sepinwall's website, HitFix, said that it really means we love you very much, sunshine, in Russian.
Oh.
So they have a talk in the car before they leave, and they talk about how Paige is very angry and how their fate is now in her hands. Officially, we drive out of this garage and go to work. Our fate is in her hands.
Yeah.
They really know the psychology of people.
Yeah.
Paige could do something stupid. You know, they have to really trust that she won't. She won't be stupid, or she won't be vengeful or angry or all kinds of different things she could be to reveal this.
Yeah, it's true.
It's probably not the most productive day at the old fake travel agency.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not.
So actually next we see Paige takes the phone and dials and starts calling somebody. And it's Louis C.K. No, no.
What in the world is wrong with you, Mike?
It's Pastor Tim. It's Pastor Tim, and she covers for them. She doesn't tell him the real reason she's been suspicious. And it was really cool how they interlaced this conversation with the Jennings looking worried at work. I thought that was pretty genius of the writers.
Wait, say that again?
Well, while she's talking to Tim, they're interlacing shots of the Philip and Elizabeth at the travel agency.
Oh, yeah.
Worried.
That was really good. It was so suspenseful and frightening, because she almost said something.
She comes pretty close, but she the way that she describes it to Tim, there's no way that he would ever suspect spies.
No.
It's just definitely weird. Parents acting a little weird. Now, you know, you're troubled about it. I'll help you being troubled about it. You should just ask them. It's kind of resolved with Tim. I don't think Tim's suspicious of anything.
No, I don't think so either.
All right, let's go to the FBI office. Jamie, Taffet and Stan. Now, Taffet admits he's been divorced. No way, man. Who would divorce that stud? Did that surprise you that Taffet had been through a divorce?
It surprises me that Taffet knows people that he doesn't work with.
Taffet wants to know what caused the rupture of Stan's marriage. What happened, Stan?
And see, this is so awful. You know, and this is why you don't lie, and this is why you don't do terrible things, because now Stan is lying to this investigator to cover up his affair with Nina.
Right.
You know, and if he can't tell the truth, because if he tells the truth, he's under even deeper suspicion, and maybe his job's on the line, and maybe his freedom's on the line. But he lies, and lying is such a bad option. It's just,
what a complete circle. Stan's marriage fell apart due to a Russian spy, and he's an FBI agent. Just perfect.
Yeah.
But Stan just says, well, things just fell apart. Taffet is really smart for being into this. Like, what made your marriage fall apart? If he has that answer, he has a lot of the answer that he needs for this problem in the office.
Yeah. I mean, seriously. But, did you notice who's on to Martha now?
Yeah, well, let's get to that. I want to get to that. So Taffet and Stan are still talking, and he asks who might have placed the bug in Gad's pen and pauses. When Stan pauses that answer, Taffet notices that pause.
Yep.
And what do you think, what's going on in Stan's head here when he hears this question? What's the light bulb going on?
What's the pause?
Stan is the spy whisperer, right? He's got these intuitions.
Right.
And this is a click. This is a light bulb going on for him. I'm just wondering what you think of the...
Well, I think he's starting to suspect Martha. I think he's... When he's talking about that, and he realizes, like, oh, wait a minute. Because Taffet asks him... What was the question Taffet asked? He asked, like, is there anybody else in the office that you think, you know, could have a reason to bug, or that could have access to Gad or something like that?
Yeah, who put the bug in Gad's pen?
Right. You know, I mean, I think what Stan's mind was doing, which is what Stan's mind does, he's a methodical guy. He's a bright, bright guy. He's a thinker. He's quick on his feet. So Stan's like, I guess, doing the math in his head. Like, okay, so who could possibly have access, have a reason, maybe somehow, blah, 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 in his head? Whoa, Martha.
Yeah, because look at the math of the pen. Stan knows it's not himself. Adderholt found the bug, so it's probably not him. And the person getting bugged is Gad, so it's probably not him who's left. You know, Martha's sitting right outside the office there. And also, it was interesting, when he lies about the reason his marriage ending and the knowledge of the pen, he uses the exact same response, which doesn't go unnoticed by Taffet.
Right. Yeah.
So he kind of knows that Taffet, I think, knows he's been told two lies here right in a row. He's measuring him.
Yeah, maybe. You know, Taffet's no slouch. He's got that, you know, productive day thing going on.
Couldn't keep his marriage together, though.
Well, okay. So who wants to be married to Walter Taffet?
Mrs. Taffet.
Now, I don't think Mrs. Taffet wants to be married to him. He's probably coming home and saying things like, I see the spaghetti is slightly burned.
Yeah, maybe. Well, Stan goes right to Martha's desk, but she's left early for some family issue.
Yeah.
All right. Then now that Jenny's come home to find Paige watching some soap opera.
Right?
The context of the soap opera is threats of prosecution. Pretty cool circle there.
And, you know, they had to be doing a dance around the table at the offices of FX, because these guys take such great pride in finding not only the program, but that like when you walk, and I don't know if our audience knows this, but I'm going to tell you guys, this is how meticulous these people are. When there's a TV show showing, they are reflecting to you the day and the time of day that show would have been on. So, like, let's say they come home at 3:42 in the afternoon. That soap opera that's on, when they walk in the door, that's the moment that would have been playing at 3:42 in the afternoon, Eastern time, on that date. That's how great these guys are at what they're doing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool how strictly they adhere to the details.
They really do. It's amazing, and I love that.
If you can trust the little stuff like that, then you can really trust the big stuff, and they're obviously onto that. They know that we know that.
Oh, for sure.
All right, Oleg and Arkady are talking about needing photographs of this bomber plane now, and Arkady's, I guess, been told to tell Oleg to get the photos. And I think the point of this scene was to talk about how compartmentalized all the Soviet Union strategy was, the KGB, like the right hand not knowing what the left hand was doing. Like Oleg needing to get these photos would help Nina helping Anton, but Oleg's got another plan to get Nina freed by helping get Zinaida traded for her, right? He doesn't even know what the photos are going to end up doing or going, who they're going to.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah. And then that's so iffy. You know, his plan is more direct. It's a more direct help for Nina. But yeah. So.
And also, like, when Oleg hid in the room and hit Stan in their little plot to get Nina freed or get Zinaida worried, that Arkady had no idea that Oleg was doing that. Right, so Arkady doesn't know what Oleg's up to, and Oleg doesn't know what they're up to back home with the photographs. It's all walled off from each other.
Right. And it was really so funny because of the way Arcady was explaining it. He's like, well, you know, basically, you know, the minders don't know what's happening with, you know, the shop, and the minders are doing something else. And these people over here, you know, like, it's all so secretive that nobody knows what anybody else is doing. It's just, it's almost like a farce.
Yeah. Pretty cool. So they get interrupted by Tatiana, and Arcady sends Oleg out of the room, but Tatiana talks about how somebody named Willow was threatened by one of our people. Do you remember Willow, or do you know Willow?
Yeah, well, that's Zenaida.
Okay.
Yeah, that's her call name, her agent name, you know?
Oh, that slipped my mind. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's another evidence of compartmentalized is that they think a KGB person is onto some other plot that is after Zenaida. They don't even know that plot, right? They think it's that plot.
Right.
Crazy. So Arcady says it has to have been approved by someone in the inner circle, and they're screwing it all up. So, you know, they don't. It's so funny how that all these little subplots are crashing into each other.
I love how they had Arcady do that reasoning, you know, because really, honestly, it completely washes. It completely makes sense that all this confusion could be happening because it's a spy agency.
So Arcady rushes off to the center to straighten it all out, probably tangle it more up.
Or at the very least, get no answers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good about Willow. I never caught that was Zenaida's code name.
Well, yeah, because that's who the note was from.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at the Jennings house, Stan comes over and invites himself to dinner again and grabs a beer and kind of laments his job. And this is a very cool scene because Paige interacts with Stan here, you know, for the first time with this knowledge. And she gives him the big time stare down. Philip blames it on baptism and her being more observant. He notices the stare down, too.
Yeah, that was so scary because she was just like, I mean, seriously. And there was that just split second moment of Stan having some sort of realization. And I have a feeling that's going to come back because Stan doesn't ever miss the details. I don't know.
Do you think Paige was worried about her mom and dad or worried more about Stan?
I think Paige was having a moment of, whoa, this dude is an anti-spy agent. Like, he's a counter-spy agent. That's what he does for a living. I think that was the first moment that occurred to her in light of her new knowledge, and she could not take her eyes off him.
Yeah, like, all this machinery has been going on and on. With all these times Stan comes over for dinner... Paige was actually on that Slate Insider podcast. Paige, the actress, was on. And she talked about how they play racquetball together and they have beer and talk to each other. They're friends. And yet all this other mechanism underneath it all is spydom is going on in the background.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was it, Jamie, for 310. Stingers. What's stingers? Where'd you get stingers from?
Oh, I think that's a spy term. I didn't look it up. I have to apologize. But yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what that is. Let's see.
A stinger is a spy.
I don't know if it's a spy, but I know that's I've heard it before.
Next week, while you're looking that up, next week is 311, One Day in the Life of Anton Bakhlenov. So we're going to see maybe more about the mystery of motivations behind Bakhlenov and what he's doing, hopefully.
Okay, so check this out. It's a military term. It's a U.S. Army shoulder-launched heat-seeking anti-aircraft missile with a range of 3 miles.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's also a stinging blow or remark or the like, or a person or a thing that stings. I guess we've kind of had, oh, and I wonder what they were drinking in the hotel, because it's also a cocktail made of brandy and creme de menthe.
Interesting. On the Nextons, I caught myself again watching the Nextons. But one of the next ons is Yousef describing a CIA weapon that can knock a helicopter out of the sky, like maybe a Stinger missile. But why would this episode have stingers?
I don't know. Maybe next episode we'll have stingers.
We also see on the next ons, Linda, Lisa, whatever, whichever name is correct. We've called her both. the black lady in the relocated house.
Right.
With the car dropping on the guy. Yeah. And her husband talking.
Oh, boy. Here comes old nasty juice jar guy.
Right. The juice jar guy. And yep. So 311's next week, Jamie, One Day in the Life of Anton Bakunov. If you want to reach us, you can text us at or text us. You can Twitter us at Scathing Tweets for me. And what's yours?
At Word Girly.
All right. So until next week, Bakunov will hang it up for this episode of Stingers.